The Piano Matters is a production of the Classical Network and is supported in part by listeners like you. Become a member at WWFM.org. Thank you.
Matters, and we will continue on our journey through Chopin's music, Chopin 1810-1849. This is the 210th anniversary of the birth of the great Polish bard, and we'll be talking about him and reading about him from other sources. I want to begin, though, with Samson Francois, who we heard very recently. He plays very differently. It's sometimes very icy. You may not love him, but he always brings in new concepts to the pieces. So we're going to hear the great and very hackneyed by many people, Chopin's C-sharp minor waltz, played so miserably that sometimes I go mad when I hear it. Also, the third theme was Liberace's theme song, and I think that Chopin could have indeed indicted him on some sort of crime. Chopin's waltzes, talking about them generally, are among the world's most often played piano music. And they fall into two styles, gracious and brilliantly decorated, or melancholy. The great pianist John Ogden calls them the brightest jewels in the greatest salons of the time. You know, the waltzes are peculiarly Chopinesque. The Viennese waltz of the day is exemplified by those of Lanner and the elder Johann Strauss. They were anathema to Chopin's rarefied nature, and after his stay in Vienna, he reported, "I have acquired nothing of that which is specially Viennese by nature, and accordingly, I am still unable to play waltzes a la Vienna." Well, Arthur Headley wrote this, "The Chopin waltzes were never meant to be danced by ordinary, mundane creatures of flesh and blood." Let's listen to the great Francois. Students of Courtauld, but that really means nothing, for he plays like only himself in the C-sharp minor, Opus 64, near the end of Chopin's composing life. Thank you. That was Samson Francois in the Chopin C-sharp minor waltz. And I would advise you to try to listen to Rachmaninoff and Cortot playing it in a very different style of a very older time, as they say, the golden age of the piano. This is The Piano Matters. I'm David Duval, and I'm so glad to be with you. We really need each other, and Chopin needs to be heard by the entire world. Going to have you listen to Evgeny Kissin in the Scherzo number 2 in B flat minor. Well, this is a longer work than I usually play. It's about 10 minutes. Kissin plays it very well, and you will hear the great second theme 3 times, and each time it will be done just a little differently, so listen closely. The Scherzo number 2, Schumann said, this is a Byronic poem. Ironic and passionate. Let's listen then to the second scherzo, which has been played to death again and yet retains its freshness for every generation, even when it's battered. Liszt, in his master classes, refused to have anyone play it at all. In the second scherzo of Chopin, and a very fine performance, live and filled with life and ardor indeed. This is The Piano Matters. I'm David Dubois, and I'm so glad that we are broadcasting the life and the works of Frédéric Chopin on his 210th anniversary. I'd like to read to you something that Paderewski, who was one of the great Chopin interpreters and who was so inspired by him throughout his life. He says, "To this music of Chopin, tender and tempestuous, tranquil and passionate, heartrending, potent, overwhelming, this music which eludes metrical discipline, rejects the fetters of rhythmical rule, and refuses submission to the metronome, as if it were the yoke of some hated government." Remember, Paderewski was not the hated government, but the president of Poland when he wrote this. Chopin's music bids us here know and realize that our nation, our land, the whole of Poland lives, feels, and moves in tempo rubato. Well, that's a very subtle thing. It's not just some nationalist piece of writing. Tempo rubato is that wondrous wavering of rhythm that Chopin brought to piano playing, and which really in the beginning when he came to Paris dumbfounded his listeners. Well, is he playing in time? Is he not? The opera composer Meyerbeer said, "What do you mean that mazurka is in 3/4 time? You're playing it in 2/4 time." Chopin got very mad. He said, "Well, it's a national trait. We do not play in time." You understand that this was the beginning of the art of interpretation, this tempo rubato, where the pianist would create his own self within the work. And sometimes this has become a real barbarism. And many pianists have made tempo rubato into a nightmare. Well, Paderewski indeed played it with a great, great flair and feeling, and his whole life depended in many ways on Chopin's inspiration. Remember, throughout World War II, Poland, besieged under Nazi rule, lived to be able to hear the revolutionary etude or the Polonaise in A-flat played. Well, we are going to go on with our third selection. It's going to be played by the wonderful Maurizio Pollini, certainly born in Italy, but a Milanese, which can be a very different thing than another town. And he's going to do for us the Chopin C-sharp minor Nocturne, Opus 27, number one. This is one of the great nocturnes. I call it A Night in Venice. And there are many meanderings and murmurings and possibly some violence. And notice in the middle how the Polonaise rhythm projects itself. Here he is on the Piano Matters, Maurizio Pollini, Chopin Nocturne.
Thank you.
the wonderful, wonderful pianist, certainly along with Michelangelo, the great Italian pianist of the 20th century, and his name Maurizio Pollini, born, I believe, in 1942. We're going to continue the Piano Matters with a wondrous work. It's going to be the Revolutionary Study, or Etude, Etude and Study are the same word. Chopin was coming back from Vienna through Strasbourg in a stagecoach going to Paris. And he finished, so the story goes, the last measures of the fiery revolutionary etude. Why was it revolutionary? Well, of course, one can hear the bleakness of it, the crack of creation in the first chord. However, what amazing work. Everyone wanted Chopin to leave, not come back to Poland. The resurrection of the Poles against the Grand Duchy of Warsaw, which was owned by Russia, and it was now a moment where he had to make the decision, will I go home, will I fight? Everyone said, you've got to leave, you cannot come home. And indeed, he never did again. He entered Paris, and the etudes made a sensation. They are dedicated to Franz Liszt, who played them everywhere. And we're going to hear the 12th, which is a masterwork, as all of them are. The left hand is the predominance, along with the right hand theme in projectiles. It's an incredible piece of tremendous left hand difficulty. You have to practice it very slowly, or your hand really hurts. Here is, yes indeed, the greatest pianist in some people's minds that lived in all time, Vladimir Horowitz. That was the Revolutionary Etude, Opus 10, number 12, played by Horowitz. And I thought, breathtakingly, so meticulous and so perfect a rendering. I know very well that he practiced that from childhood on. Well, this is the 210th birthday of Chopin, born in a little town outside of Warsaw. And he left and came back to Warsaw about age 4. And he had already assimilated so much of the wondrous woods and the trees, the climate, the dances, the mazurka, and so forth. Olin Downs writes this. He was the music critic of the New York Times. I hope he's not forgotten, because he really many times hits it on the nose. He says this about Chopin. It is a striking fact, a greater percentage of all that he wrote is alive more than any other master in the depth and craftsmanship of his music, which often goes unrecognized. There's a good reason. It is so immediately comprehensible. And there are those whom such an unconditional appeal of a great art seems incongruous. They cannot believe that music can be profound yet appeal to the multitudes. Chopin, as no other composer, brought the East and West of Europe and the Slavonic, the Latin, and Germanic cultures together while being personal and national. Could that, this fact alone of his art, might bring men and nations together? This, to me, of course, is an important sentence, because without art, I do not believe life can go on in any sense of refinement. As Leschetizky, the great teacher, said, no life, no art. No art, no life. Let's listen to the mazurka in C sharp minor, again played by Horowitz. This is from his comeback recital in 1965, and I must say, no one has ever played it better. I may change my mind tomorrow, but right this minute, this remains my favorite performance of the C sharp minor, opus 30, number 4, one of the great and really ironical works, if you listen carefully, and heroic too, in its own way, Horowitz the artist.
Thank you.
Oh, what a striking, what an exquisite example of the Chopin Mazurka in C sharp minor. Opus 30, number 4, Horowitz, the player. He told me once, and he really meant it, yes, I like all of Mahler's symphonies, and they're all wonderful, but one Chopin Mazurka is worth all of them. Even the worst one is pure gold. Yes, indeed. Within these 59 dances, these vertiginous masterworks, Chopin lays the foundation of all 19th century nationalism to come. This is the Piano Matters. I'm so glad to be with you. I'm David Duval, and we've been away. We have decided that Chopin in his 210th birthday should be heard in its entirety, and we're going to try to do that in these dire and crazy times. Please, all of you, please take such good care of yourself. Claudio Arrau, an amazing man. He lived till 91, and he played Chopin in a way that was very distinctive. Some people didn't like it. He changed during his life, and we're going to hear an early recording, which is very different than the way he played it later. I think he saw it in broader strokes and larger impasto as he grew older. However, everything Arrau does is always interesting. And the scherzo is, well, it's certainly not, as Schumann said, a musical joke, the word scherzo, meaning that indeed it's clothed in many different colors and sometimes very dark ones. Note, though, the exquisite downward passage work preceded by, you could almost call them, they were before Wagner ever thought of them, they were Wagnerian tubas. And then comes the garlands. Well, it goes into a coda. Well, the fingers are very tired and they need to go forward. And it's a great rhetorical ending. Claudio Arrau loved this piece and he's going to give it to us on the Chopin birthday year, 210 years old, where this composer has touched the world daily. Thank you. there you have it. Like it or not, and I think I liked it, Claudio Arrau in the... This is The Piano Matters, and of course, we are so happy to know that our listeners are among the most wonderful people, and they have sponsored this extraordinary station, which must survive. We have worked very hard to continue through these incredible days of crisis to bring you the highest manner of music making in radio land. Arthur Hedley, the Chopin scholar, wrote, "Chopin knows what sounds are heard in Poland's fields and woods. He has listened to the Polish village. He has made it his own." Many people do not know that this soaking in of all things was a trademark of Chopin. He did not read much. He did not have time on this earth to sit down and read all of Balzac's novels. He knew the man, but he didn't have that time. He had only 39 years, and for him to write one work would be an excruciating thing. But he was also, in his better moments when he wasn't coughing to death, a fabulous mimic. Someone said, in fact, the actor Bocage, one of the great actors of the time in Paris, said, if he wasn't a pianist and a composer, he could be the greatest stage actor that ever lived. Chopin was an amazing talent in oh so many directions. Chopin taught us, Howard Hanson, the American composer, wrote, and is he a neglected composer, that it is so important to write a miniature, just as important as to write a symphony. Chopin was an artist who believed in music as a means of communication from the composer to all people. Yes, that universal concept is always talked about in Chopin. Polish or not, he is universal. Chopin said, "I decided that my universe will be the soul and heart of man." The third ballade, oh, is that a that's the great charmer of the four ballades, each one a narrative poem of the highest distinction. We're going to listen to the American born, in fact, he's born in Long Branch, New Jersey, died at age 43, unfortunately. His name, Julius Katchen, and I hope always that his name remains alive. Here is the third ballade, opus 47, Frédéric Chopin. Thank you. Ballade number 3, played so graciously and so technically beautifully by the American pianist Julius Katchen. The 20th century produced a very great composer in Karol Szymanowski, Polish born. He too had tuberculosis as Chopin, and he died tragically. He loved his compatriots' music so much. But I'd like to end our program with a few words by Szymanowski himself. He has spoken to the world in a language that in itself is not only most beautiful, but is comprehensible to all. He has spoken of Poland's unshakable will to live. Untold millions of people at the farthest reaches of the globe learned of Poland's tragedy, but unyielding existence solely on account of Frederick Chopin. And indeed, that in many ways is true. Chopin and Poland are forever linked, and yet Chopin and the piano are forever linked. And indeed, I believe the instrument would be in jeopardy without the magnificent output of, as one person called him, the Polish Eagle. I call him the Polish Bard. This is David Dubal. Thank you for listening.
Piano Matters is produced at the studios of WWFM, the Classical Network. The associate producer and engineer is Rachel Katz. For a complete playlist, log on to wwfm.org and click on Playlist. The Piano Matters is made possible in part from the support of the listener members of WWFM, the Classical Network.